Got stubborn spots, unwanted hair, or uneven skin? The CAPS Laser Center offers advanced solutions. They offer a full range of advanced laser treatments like Halo and Moxie that help reveal smoother, clearer, healthier-looking skin. CAPS is one of the top providers in the world for laser treatments, and their expert team delivers personalized care every step of the way. When you book your first Laser Center appointment, you'll get a $50 CAPS MedSpa gift card. So don't wait. Book today at experiencecaps.com. CAPS, where confidence begins.
How do some mysteries come and go, even with hard evidence to dissect and science on our side? And how do other mysteries survive for centuries through legend, in place of any proof at all? Welcome to Strange and Unexplained with me, Daisy Egan. I am a big believer in science, which is a weird thing to have to say. One might as well say they believe in air. There's nothing really to believe in, per se, it's just there, an immutable fact. And we need it. But these days, saying you believe in science has become so polarizing that it's been boiled down to basically signal a preference for hard facts, data, and conclusions made from rigorous testing over relying on gut feelings. But this is an oversimplification. When faced with strange phenomena, as you've heard time and time again on this podcast, my gut tells me to seek out the opinion of someone who studies the actual world around us first. And if their answers don't make sense to me, my intuition kicks in again. I'll consider, who else can explain this better? Then I'll ask, how can I square up these different takes? It's my own brand of scientific method, one with plenty of room for snark and suspicion. And so, I'm pretty sure that if I woke up to find my own town covered in goo, like the folks in Oakville, Washington did in 1994, I would be calling all the scientists I could find to have them figure out what the stuff was, especially if it was making me and my neighbors ill. But what might happen if the scientists in question couldn't agree and everyone was just left to shrug their shoulders and move on? Oakville, Washington is a small town along Highway 12. In 1994, Oakville was home to just 665 people. It was founded back in 1905 as a logging town. Despite its minuscule size, the town hosts an annual zucchini festival. And I don't mean to piss on anyone's parade, but the only place zucchini should be is hiding in bread or muffins. The book Weird Washington, Your Travel Guide to Washington's Local Legends and Best-Kept Secrets by Jefferson Davis and Al Euphrasio tells us that Oakville also played host to the last horseback bank robbery in the state. And like so many towns in its region, Oakville boasts an impressive amount of rainfall per year, an average 52 inches, with the town seeing rainfall 40% of the year. Perhaps a perfectly dim, damp, sleepy setting for a Twilight Zone-style scenario to unfurl. On August 7th, 1994, according to Weird Washington, Oakville resident Sunny Barklift, quote, looked out through the rain at the black asphalt roof of a small shed on her property. She noticed it was covered in globules about the size of grains of rice. When she and others picked up the globs, they saw they were clear and had a jelly-like texture. Shortly after handling the material, however, Barklift and two other people went to the hospital suffering from fatigue and nausea. End quote. One of those who were hospitalized was Sunny's mother, Dottie, who reportedly collapsed after coming into contact with the stuff. Sunny told Unsolved Mysteries that when she found her mother, quote, she was cold, drenched with perspiration. My mom had been vomiting. She had extreme vertigo. She complained that she had difficulty with her vision. Her vision was blurring. End quote. Dottie's doctor couldn't pinpoint the problem and diagnosed her with Meniere's disease, which affects the inner ear and causes recurring ear infections. However, not only did that not account for her other symptoms, after her recovery from this bout, Dottie never had another ear infection. Sunny and the others were not the only ones to get sick, though. Unfortunately, a kitten who had apparently ingested some of the mysterious stuff died from what appeared to be an intestinal issue. Tom Paulson, a journalist with the Seattle Post-Intelligencer at the time, was the one to break the story. In an interview he gave to local NPR station KUOW in 2025, he recalled that at the time, quote, "I started out thinking this was going to be kind of a joke, and it was a slow summer day. I was just looking for some way to get out of the office," end quote. He continues, he was, quote, "thinking, I'm just going to have a fun, goofy story here. And then it started raining while we were there, and blobs fell out of the sky. I saw the blobs," end quote. But as more and more people started getting sick after coming into contact with the mysterious glop, it became clear that this was no joke. Oakville resident Beverly Roberts said she was in the hospital for almost a week with severe vertigo after she took some blobs home to get a closer look at them. Beverly also reported that several of her friends' pets, at least 12, succumbed to the stuff after eating it. According to freelance writer A.J. Hotz's piece on Medium titled "Do Not Ask, the 1994 Oakville Blobs," larger animals were able to survive the illness, suffering from intestinal issues. But small animals like birds, frogs, and kittens were not so lucky. Honestly, Beverly would be me in this scenario. I cannot help myself around stuff I know I should leave alone. I was once picking at some white stuff on a wooden fence until someone told me I was picking at bird shit. I was 7, to be clear. It's not like this happened last week. I know what bird shit looks like now. My husband Kurt is always yelling at me to leave weird shit alone. I can't help it. Speaking of which, apparently the neighborhood bear is back, and I am so furious. I haven't seen her again. I just want to say hi. Beverly Roberts also told Unsolved Mysteries, quote, "Everybody in the whole town came down with, like, a flu, only it was a really hard flu. It didn't last, like, 7 days. It lasted 7 weeks, 2 or 3 months," end quote. And then, 9 days after the first globs appeared in Oakville, on August 16th, police officer David Lacey found goo covering his car while he was out on parole. He tried to clear the stuff off the windshield using his wipers, but only succeeded in spreading it around to the point where he couldn't see out of the windshield. So he pulled over to investigate. Officer Lacey told Unsolved Mysteries on Season 9 in 1996, quote, "You know, you could pretty much squish it through your fingers. We knew it wasn't something we would normally see because we had never experienced it before. We had some bells go off in our heads that said that basically, this isn't right. This isn't normal," end quote. According to a piece on Medium from 2024, Lacey was apparently doing a ride-along with a buddy who Lacey turned to and said, quote, "Geez, this isn't right. We're out in the middle of nowhere, basically, and where did this come from?" end quote. Buddy, even if you'd been smack dab in the middle of downtown Seattle, gelatinous goo should not be appearing out of nowhere. Journalist Tom Paulson and Sonny Barcliff contacted the Federal Aviation Administration and the nearby McChord Air Force Base, neither of which admitted to any knowledge of the origin of the blobs. And this is where things went from strange to truly confounding. After the break, different organizations will have very different opinions on what this mysterious slime was. Strangers, I wrote this ad in the passenger waiting area at Penn Station in New York. I have been all over New York City the past 3 days, and Lord knows what I'm carrying on my clothes, my shoes, and my hair. How I grew up in that city without always being sick is a wonder. Thank goodness I'm going home to my Miracle Made sheets. The silver-infused fabric in Miracle Made's bedding prevents almost 100% of bacteria growth, so my bed doesn't become a petri dish. All that hidden bacteria in your sheets not only helps spread the common cold and other nasty bugs, but can clog your pores and cause breakouts. I do not need any help in that department. You look at me the wrong way, and I break out. The bacteria-preventing technology in my Miracle-Made sheets means 3 times less laundry, which saves time, money, and water. Plus, Miracle-Made sheets are so soft, it's like sleeping on a cloud. And they don't come with the price tag of other luxury sheets. Upgrade your sleep or give the gift of better rest. Go to trymiracle.com/strange to try Miracle Made sheets today. You'll save over 40%. And when you use promo code STRANGE, you'll get an extra 20% off plus a free 3-piece towel set. They make an amazing gift, and with a 30-day money-back guarantee, there's no risk. That's trymiracle.com/strange, code STRANGE at checkout. Thanks to Miracle Made for sponsoring this episode. Paulson and Barcliff originally contacted the FAA because they thought maybe it was airplane waste. Initially, the organization refused requests to investigate the origin and composition of the gelatinous blobs plaguing Oakville and its animals and residents. Meanwhile, Paulson and Barcliff were still on the case, and after some persistence, the Department of Ecology and the State Health Department agreed to do some investigating. According to a piece in the Fort Worth Star-Telegram from August 28, 1994, Mike Osweiler, a state hazardous material official, said they found, quote, a number of cells of various sizes in the blobs, but what kind of creature the cells came from is still uncertain, end quote. Apparently, there were two different types of bacteria found, though neither were considered harmful to humans. However, Discovery UK reported that microbiologist Mike McDowell at the health department said one was known to infect digestive systems. Strangely, according to reporting on the History Channel, McDowell said that, quote, before any more tests could be run on the strange blobs, the department's samples mysteriously disappeared, end quote. Apparently, his claims couldn't be substantiated, and it is possible that the samples were misplaced, mislabeled, or accidentally thrown away, rather than it being some nefarious cover-up kind of situation. When Paulson and Barcliff didn't get satisfying answers from the departments they'd gotten to take a look at the samples, they hired their own company to do private testing. Those tests revealed the presence of two detectable strains of bacteria in the mystery blobs: Pseudomonas fluorescens, a harmless bacteria that lives in soil and water, and Enterobacter cloacae, which can be a pathogen, but is commonly found in the human gut and generally is harmless. However, according to the History Channel, quote, in people with compromised immune systems, certain strains have been known to cause urinary tract and respiratory infections, end quote. Pseudomonas fluorescens can also be used to protect plant roots from fungi, while Enterobacter cloacae can be used to protect plants from disease and is also relatively harmless to humans unless ingested or introduced to an open wound or an orifice such as the ear or nose. In that case, it could cause infection. But again, both of these bacteria are common in the digestive system of humans and other animals. So if these chemicals and bacteria were relatively harmless, how come so many people were harmed? And furthermore, what the hell was the stuff and where did it come from? Firstly, one had to consider, was there any track record of mysterious stuff falling from the sky in the region? Well, 2 years earlier, and about 2 hours northeast from Oakville, a couple was enjoying a Seahawks game at home when what they thought was a meteor fell through their living room, smelling of sewage. According to a piece in the Seattle Times, quote, emergency personnel decided it was indeed a basketball-sized hunk of frozen waste that had crashed through the couple's roof, landing only a few feet away from the spot in the next room where Jerry was sitting in front of the TV with her parents, end quote. The frozen poop meteor that hit the home was dyed blue, as all airplane bathroom waste is, but the goo in Oakville was clear and didn't reek of human waste. A more compelling lead comes in the form of an anecdote from that same year the blobs rained down. According to Tom Paulson in a piece for the Freelance Star in August of 1994, a couple named Jim and Kathy Belanger were camping along the Washington coast around the time the residents of Oakville were being pummeled by slime. The couple claimed that while camping, they heard loud explosions and then found the shoreline littered with dead crabs and jellyfish-like blobs. A piece in Daytona Beach News Journal on August 21st reported that Kathy said the blobs didn't look like jellyfish up close. She touched them, and her dog ran up and down the beach. The next day, she and her dog were sick. Originally, they didn't think the blobs and crabs were connected until they heard about the blobs in Oakville. Meanwhile, local reps Jolene Unsold and Norman Dix were inquiring with the military about their bombing drills just off the coast. A spokesperson for Rep Unsold said the inquiries were not about the blobs, but rather were about concern for the local salmon runs. And though the military was indeed dropping cluster bombs into the water, a spokesperson for the National Marine Fisheries Service in Portland said this was the first report of the bombing causing any harm to sea life. Personally, stranger, I find that very hard to believe. And so, the most popular theory was that the bombs exploded the jellyfish in the ocean into smithereens, and all of the exploded jellyfish bits flew all the way up into the clouds, which rained them back down to Earth. Now, I'm no meteorologist, but this is the first time I've heard of clouds being able to catch and store solid objects. It's not like the bombing would have atomized the jellyfish. It would have had to have been chunks of jellyfish. Even if they were the size of grains of rice, clouds aren't like nets. Let's say somehow the bombs absolutely obliterated the jellyfish into basically liquid and then flung that liquid thousands of feet up into the air into the clouds. The liquefied jellyfish would then have had to somehow re-solidify on its way back down, perhaps by freezing. And as Sonny Barcliff told the Rutland Daily Herald for a piece titled Blobs from Space, this theory wouldn't explain why the goo only came down when it was raining and only came down during two rainfalls. An astute point. Surely some of the goo would have fallen back down to Earth long before it reached the clouds, and considering the bombing took place 30 to 50 miles offshore, accounts vary, why did the stuff only fall in Oakville? A piece on IFL Science from 2024 reported, quote, according to Associate Professor Paul Johnson at the University of North Georgia, it is plausible that something the size of parts of jellyfish could be pulled into the atmosphere and redeposited during a storm. But if there were really up to six events over 3 weeks, it's less likely that those particles would be in the air for so long, end quote. To be clear, I only read of two blob raining events, not six. To make matters even more mysterious, the Daytona Beach News and Journal reported that, quote, while she acknowledged the illnesses might just have been coincidence, Ms. Barcliff's interest intensified when a hospital lab technician looked at the goop under a microscope and said it contained human white blood cells. But Osweiler said his laboratory staff found the cells had no nuclei, something human white blood cells do have. He said he had no idea what jellyfish cells look like, end quote. I don't know shit about human biology. Call me a size queen, but I can't wrap my head around things that small. At first, I thought maybe someone who had handled the stuff accidentally transferred some of their own white blood cells onto the stuff, but obviously that can't be the case if our white blood cells have nuclei and these cells didn't. I didn't even know cells could be nucleusless. Osweiler was apparently equally ignorant. How are you going to call yourself a scientist and just be like, man, I don't know what jellyfish cells look like? Like, bro, pick up an encyclopedia or an eighth grade science book? Heck, maybe even ask a peer in your field. I know Google wasn't a thing back in 94, but one could still find out important information when one needed to. And this feels like it might have warranted a little more investigation. On the other hand, perhaps like myself, Osweiler thought the very idea that exploded jellyfish were falling from the sky so preposterous that he wouldn't even warrant the idea with his attention. According to a piece published in the Roanoke Times back in 1994 called The Goo Is Falling, The Goo Is Falling, Osweiler said, quote, that's a long way for jellyfish to travel, unless they're shooting them in from the coast. This is a head-scratcher, end quote. Osweiler believed the stuff was man-made, or at least it looked man-made. That, coupled with the claim some residents of Oakville made that they'd seen black helicopters flying in their skies around the time the goo showed up, made some think it was some kind of germ warfare. One resident theorized on Unsolved Mysteries that perhaps the military was testing something on their town because it was such a small town, which I guess implies that the smaller the town, the less we think the people in it matter? I don't know. But her theory was that maybe the military was testing a less powerful version of something meant to really wipe out enemies. According to the piece in Medium, quote, Sonny Barklift believes that this was caused by a continuity exercise done by the military and admits to not releasing everything she knows to the public, end quote. Another theory as to the what of it all is that the goo was star jelly, a substance that has been regarded in scientific reporting and even poetry for hundreds of years. It can come from amphibians, algae, slime molds, and sodium polyacrylate, which can absorb up to 1,000 times its mass in water, creating, essentially, blobs. It's used in diapers and pads, and also in cosmetic manufacturing and electrical wire insulation. According to the piece from Discovery UK, the substance falls during meteor showers. However, the piece posits that the blobs may have, quote, emerged from a more earthly plane, whilst this would require overlooking the witness statements of those who saw the blobs fall, it has been mooted as a theory, end quote. And so, despite all the physical evidence that fell from the sky, not once, but twice, or maybe even six times, whatever that mysterious goo was that descended upon a rainy Washington town and gave its residents the flu and its pets tummy troubles is left only to the great blob lord in the sky to know. And speaking of tummy troubles, after the break, we'll move along to our next story concerning the Olgoy Khorkhoy, Mongolian for large intestine worm. Lovely. Strangers, this episode of Strange and Unexplained is brought to you by our friends at Wild Grain. Listen, with all the recalls lately of mass-produced food, the message could not be clearer to support small, independent food producers. Wild Grain delivers sourdough breads, seasonal pastries, and French butter made by small, independent bakeries right to your door. So you're getting clean, healthy ingredients instead of God only knows what's going to be in that grocery store-bought loaf. Everything bakes straight from frozen in 25 minutes or less, with simple, recognizable ingredients you can pronounce. So you can have warm, bakery-quality goods whenever you want without worrying about them going stale. Customize your box with classic, gluten-free, vegan, or protein options. And with flexible subscriptions, you can skip or cancel anytime. I love the rosemary garlic loaf. It's perfect for dipping in olive oil or including on a cheese board. The Bavarian pretzel buns make great sandwiches, and I love all their fresh pastas. They cook super quick and are a real crowd pleaser. If you're looking for an easy way to enjoy bakery quality food at home, I definitely recommend giving Wild Grain a try. The fan favorite apple cider donuts and other fall seasonal products are back for a limited time, so make sure you order before they sell out. Visit wildgrain.com/strange to get $30 off your first box, plus free croissants for life. Again, that's wildgrain.com/strange for $30 off your first box and free croissants for life. Use promo code STRANGE at checkout.
When it comes to plastic surgery, expertise matters, and CAP sets the standard. Our team includes 7 nationally ranked, board-certified plastic surgeons. From tummy tucks, breast augmentation, and liposuction to facelifts and beyond, every surgical plan is tailored to your body, goals, and recovery timeline. CAPS is trusted for consistent, visible outcomes. Plus, when you book your surgical consultation, you'll receive a $100 CAPS MedSpa gift card. Expert care, exceptional results. Visit experiencecaps.com. CAPS, where confidence begins.
For this next story, we will go about as far from the rainy climate of Washington State as possible to a land where mysterious and deadly dangers come not from the sky, but from the ground below. According to the Encyclopedia Britannica, quote, the Gobi Desert, spanning parts of northern China and southern Mongolia, is famously known as a cold desert due to its extreme climate. Unlike more familiar hot deserts, such as the Sahara, the Gobi experiences long, bitter winters with temperatures often plunging below negative 40 degrees. Yet it also endures very hot summers, with daytime temperatures frequently soaring above 104 degrees Fahrenheit. These sharp seasonal contrasts result from its high elevation and inland location, far from the moderating effects of oceans. The desert also undergoes significant temperature fluctuations between day and night, making it one of the most climatically extreme environments on Earth, end quote. Despite these extreme conditions, people have lived in the Gobi Desert for centuries. The animals of the desert have been there, of course, for millennia longer. And, as with all deserts, the majority of the animal life lives underground. With so much unseen activity going on beneath their feet, it may be no wonder a legend of an underground monster looms in the Gobi Desert. Unlike the blobs, this monster has yet to be captured and analyzed, but many over the years have claimed to see it. According to Cryptid Wiki, it is believed that the first sighting of the Mongolian death worm was all the way back in the 11th century. There are only a few in existence, but their small numbers don't prevent them from terrorizing the Mongolian people who make the desert their home. They believe the death worm preys mostly on humans and their livestock, and it can strike and kill instantly. Cryptid Wiki reports, quote, Mongolian nomads believe the giant worm covers its prey with an acidic substance that turns everything a corroded yellow color. The poison is so venomous that the prey dies instantly, end quote. In a 2007 article for Unexplained Mysteries, Daniel Harris claimed, quote, the Mongolians fear the worm and many consider just hearing the name of it bad luck. Some believe the worm to have some sort of psychic ability in that it is able to kill you by looking at you, end quote. It should come as no surprise, I guess, that descriptions of the beast vary. Any beast that strikes so suddenly is probably hard to get a good look at. According to a piece on MongolianStore.com, whose mission is to, quote, bring the purity, craftsmanship, and quiet elegance of Mongolia's nomadic heritage to the world, end quote, and includes blog pieces about various aspects of Mongolian culture, the death worm extends about a meter long and is a red worm-like creature. The piece qualifies this claim with, quote, but there is no real history of it, and many years of research have not confirmed it, end quote. According to a piece on ancientorigins.net, the death worm lays its eggs in the intestines of camels, leading to its blood-red color. The piece adds that it is sometimes described as, quote, having a spiky, pointed end and the ability to spray deadly burning acid at a target. There are also claims it can discharge electricity from its body. The death worms will reportedly shoot up from beneath the sand without warning to kill its food, camels and rodents. But unwary humans can be prey as well, end quote. The worm would not be unique in its ability to spit acid at its victims. Creatures from beetles to dinosaurs have been known to use their poisonous spit to subdue their prey. Shooting out electricity is also not a unique feature, though most animals that are known to have this talent are water-dwelling. But not all agree on the death worm's color, with some sources claiming the worm to be brown, gray, tan, or white, only turning red when it's angry. Like the Incredible Hulk, only a worm instead of a human and red instead of green. Kristen Holder over at AnimalsA2Z.com has yet another description, similar but different in its own way. Holder says the worm is, quote, 2 to 5 feet in length with brownish-yellow coloration, and it looks like a sausage with fanged ends. The tail and its head are gaping holes adorned with sharp, pointed teeth, though some descriptions replace these teeth with a sharp, protruding horn. When angered or threatened, the Mongolian death worm changes color. It becomes blue or red, and it also roars. It may explode if things escalate, as the mess this creates spreads its toxins quickly through the air and affects anything around it, end quote. If the descriptions of the Mongolian death worm, as varied as they are, sound familiar, you are probably thinking of the Sarlacc from Star Wars Episode 4, Return of the Jedi, the sandworms from Dune, and or the sandworm from Beetlejuice. With the exception of Tim Burton's black and white striped creature, the other two distinctly look like giant worms with gaping anuses lined with teeth. Definitely not my idea of a good time. While the nomads of the Gobi Desert have known about this awful creature for perhaps millennia, It wasn't until the 1920s that the West was introduced to the thing by way of a book by the American paleontologist Roy Chapman Andrews titled On the Trail of Ancient Man. As expected, there are some wildly racist descriptions in Andrews' book, and as far as I could tell, the only mention of a mythical beast in the Gobi Desert came from this passage. Quote, "Then the premier asked that if it were possible, I should capture for the Mongolian government a specimen of the Alagorhai horhai. I doubt whether any of my scientific readers can identify this animal. I could, because I had heard of it often. None of those present ever had seen the creature, but they all firmly believed in its existence and described it minutely. It is shaped like a sausage, about 2 feet long, has no head or legs, and is so poisonous that merely to touch it means instant death. It lives in the most desolate parts of the Gobi Desert, whither we are going. To the Mongols, it seems to be what the dragon is to the Chinese. The premier said that although he had never seen it himself, he knew a man who had and had lived to tell the tale. Then a cabinet minister stated that the cousin of his late wife's sister had also seen it. I promised to produce the Alagorhai horhai if we chanced to cross its path, and explained how it could be seized by means of long steel-collecting forceps. Moreover, I could wear dark glasses so that the disastrous effects of even looking at so poisonous a creature would be neutralized." End quote. Andrews doesn't mention the thing or his hunt for it again, but that, apparently, was enough to send Western explorers out to the Gobi Desert to try to capture the elusive beast for themselves. However, at some point, the Mongolian government instituted a ban on research into the death worm. I don't know if that's because a lot of white dudes showed up thinking and writing shitty racist things about them and tromping through the desert like they owned the place, or if it was because the Mongolians truly were terrified of the thing and didn't want to tempt fate. Maybe a little of both. Actually, I looked it up. It had to do with communism. Anyway, after the break, with the Iron Curtain lifted, Westerners began venturing into the Gobi Desert to search for the elusive Mongolian death worm. Strangers, this episode of Strange and Unexplained with Daisy Egan is brought to you by Alloy Health. Let's be honest, aging can come with some unwelcome changes. Sleep disruptions, hot flashes, brain fog, weight gain, and decreased libido can hit us hard. Menopause is inevitable, but it's also treatable. Almost half of women go 3+ years before seeking relief from menopausal or perimenopausal symptoms. Most don't know where to go for a solution. When someone told me I might be suffering from perimenopause, I was like, I'm only in my mid-40s. But it was the brain fog and the non-existent libido. Perimenopause can start in your 30s. Do not suffer through symptoms you can manage with the right care. That's where Alloy comes in. Alloy is a digital health platform that connects you with a menopause-specialized doctor to help you feel and look your best in midlife. Your doctor will help you find the best, safe, science-backed treatments for your symptoms, skin, hair, weight, and sexual wellness delivered to your door. I love my Alloy eye cream. It is silky and soft, and I swear, makes me look 10 years younger. Everything is done online from the comfort of your home. No waiting for an appointment or in line at the pharmacy. Alloy is fast, accessible, and treatments actually work. Join the 95% of women who tried HRT through Alloy and saw relief in the first 2 weeks. Head to myalloy.com and use the code STRANGE to tell them all about your symptoms, and you'll get a fully customized treatment plan and unlimited messaging with your doctor. Plus, you'll get 20% off your first order today. Head to myalloy.com and use code STRANGE to get 20% off your first order. This code is valid on products only.
When it comes to plastic surgery, expertise matters, and CAPS sets the standard. Our team includes 7 nationally ranked, board-certified plastic surgeons. From tummy tucks, breast augmentation, and liposuction to facelifts and beyond, every surgical plan is tailored to your body, goals, and recovery timeline. CAPS is trusted for consistent, visible outcomes. Plus, when you book your surgical consultation, you'll receive a $100 CAPS MedSpa gift card. Expert care, exceptional results. Visit experiencecaps.com. CAPS, where confidence begins.
In 1990, Czech cryptozoologist, automotive engineer, and self-avowed Dune fan, to each their own, I guess, Ivan Makkerli found himself in Mongolia on a mission to pick up where researchers before him had left off. According to the piece on MongolianStore.com, Makkerli, quote, is one of the leading researchers in the study of death worms. He heard about a deadly worm from a student and traveled to southern Mongolia in 1990 to study more. The locals were afraid to talk about the deadly worm, and the government's ban on researching and talking about the worm made it even more difficult for them to unravel the mysteries hidden in the Gobi. End quote. Makkerli was also apparently inspired to find the death worm after reading a short story by Ivan Efremov, a Soviet-era geologist, paleontologist, and science fiction writer. Speaking of the Sarlacc, Efremov was considered one of the godfathers of Star Wars, having heavily influenced George Lucas. Some go so far as to accuse Lucas of downright plagiarism, though Efremov apparently sang the praises of the Communist Party. Lucas's story was an allegory against it. Efremov's story of the Death Worm included this passage, quote, "They were two fat snake-like creatures curled up in the sand. When our Grisha jumped out of the cab, our operator shouted, 'Don't shoot, catch him alive,' and ran after him. At that moment, the old Mongolian man beside me grabbed my hand and looked at me with a frightened look and begged, 'Leave it. There will be a death. Call them back.' Suddenly, two worms formed a ring, which immediately turned dark blue. At first, Misha fell silently on the sand and became completely motionless. After a while, Grisha fell to the same place. I took my pistols and ran after them, but the two worms were gone. Unfortunately, our co-workers were already dead due to toxins." End quote. For whatever reason, this story and the rumors of the so-called death worm of Mongolia drew Makkerli toward the punishing desert in search of the toxic venom-spitting monster. Once in Mongolia, according to Unexplained Mysteries, Makkerli was told by some locals, quote, "the story of a young boy playing outside with a yellow ball. When the boy went inside, the worm followed. The boy saw the worm and touched it, and he was killed instantly. The boy's parents found him dead and a trail in the sand leading away. They knew what had killed him and went off to kill the worm, but instead, the worm killed them." End quote. A piece from Atlas Obscura had this to say, quote, "Initially, Makkerli and his team planned to bait traps with the worm's favorite foods, but locals didn't know its diet. So they took a page from Dune, jerry-rigging a thumper in hopes its rhythmic pounding would summon the burrowing beasts. For 2 months, they crisscrossed the desert in what prominent cryptozoologist Carl Schuker characterized in a blog post as a diligent, groundbreaking monster hunt." End quote. According to that same piece in Atlas Obscura, Makkerli tried two more times to capture the elusive monster, once in 1992 using explosives, and again in 2004 using aircraft to survey the area. The piece goes on to explain that teams from all over, including America, Great Britain, and New Zealand, had come looking for the thing, and that soul travelers also came out to conduct their own searches. On an episode of Beast Hunter, a TV show from the National Geographic Channel, a man named Puruv tells a story he'd heard about the worm. Quote, "There was the Russian military here. One of the local guys was serving as a guide for them. As they were driving down the road, they spotted something on the side of the road. It looked metal and kind of sausage-like, and they pulled over to see what it was. The guide started warning them, 'No, no, no, don't touch it. It's a very dangerous animal. Stay away, it's a death worm.' The guides maybe didn't understand his language too well, or maybe they just ignored him. But he said they pulled out some gasoline, dumped it on the animal, and the animal actually exploded." End quote. The host of Beast Hunter, wildlife scientist Pat Spain, also interviews a woman named Chimigay, who claims to have seen the worm firsthand when she was young. Apparently, she didn't get too close, but she said it was about 2 feet long and reddish-brown. "I don't think she saw any teeth-lined anuses or spikes, but whatever it was she saw freaked her family out so much, they moved away the next day." One man tells Spain of a group of nomads who encountered a worm. According to him, the worm sent out electrical charges, killing all but one of them immediately. The surviving man ran back to the village to tell the tale. Another local featured on the episode recalls the story of a camel accidentally stepping on the worm, whereupon the worm sent poisonous venom up the camel's leg, burning it severely. And if you find yourself thinking it might have been a spitting cobra, those don't tend to live in northern Asia. So there. Now, I'm no zoologist, but I don't know of many animals that have two distinct methods of killing like the Mongolian death worm is said to have. An electric eel, for example, doesn't also use venom to subdue its prey, and a cobra doesn't use electricity in addition to its venom. That is, of course, not to say that there might be some animals out there that have developed a whole repertoire of defenses. I just don't know any. In his search, beast hunter Pat Spain was unable to catch a glimpse of the elusive creature himself. Neither, of course, has anyone else, at least with proof of the matter, which naturally leaves us skeptics, well, skeptical. Then again, the mythos of this beast has survived centuries and many generations. So what on earth, or in hell, could it be? Strangers, you know how I feel about therapy. Everyone should be in it. Whether you're dealing with a major crisis or just basic day-to-day struggles, therapy can help you get from morning to night without feeling like you want to give up. But therapy is expensive and therapists can be really hard to find. With Rula, you get in-network, covered care with most major insurance plans. The average copay for Rula patients is $15. But depending on your benefits, your copay could be as little as $0 per session. With Rula, you can find the right therapist for you. Rula partners with a network of over 15,000 therapists and psychiatrists nationwide, enabling you to find your personalized solution and the right therapist for you based on your needs, preferences, and state requirements. Rula is true end-to-end care, committed to supporting you and staying with you every step of the way on your mental health journey. From finding the right therapist to helping you schedule appointments and monitoring your progress, Rula is there to help. Rula providers are carefully screened and vetted, and Rula supports you through every aspect of your mental health journey, from therapy to medication management. Rula partners with over 100 insurance plans so that you don't have to worry about cost on top of all your other worries. It's real therapy from licensed professionals at a price that actually makes sense. There's no wait lists, no frustrating back and forth. Rula makes it easy to find a mental health care provider who is accepting new patients, and appointments are available as soon as tomorrow. Thousands of people are already using Rula to get affordable, high-quality therapy that's actually covered by insurance. Visit rula.com/strange to get started. That's rula.com/strange. You deserve mental health care that works with you, not against your budget.
When it comes to plastic surgery, expertise matters, and CAP sets the standard. Our team includes 7 nationally ranked, board-certified plastic surgeons. From tummy tucks, breast augmentation, and liposuction to facelifts and beyond, every surgical plan is tailored to your body, goals, and recovery timeline. CAPS is trusted for consistent, visible outcomes. Plus, when you book your surgical consultation, you'll receive a $100 CAPS MedSpa gift card. Expert care, exceptional results. Visit experiencecaps.com. CAPS, where confidence begins.
Cryptozoologists and beast hunters are commendable for their apparently unshakable faith in the existence of animals of which there is little to no proof. No one has yet to produce a Bigfoot specimen or even its scat. So-called evidence of intentionally broken trees, dens, or even calls are dubious at best. Even after science definitively showed no DNA of an unknown creature in Loch Ness, believers still think Nessie is in there. There has never been any verifiable proof that the death worm exists. No telltale cast-off skin, no poop, no photographic or video evidence that the thing really is there. Even its eggs it's alleged to lay in dead camels haven't been found. Writing for Live Science in 2014, Bad Science writer Benjamin Radford explains, quote, Consider also that no live or dead Mongolian death worms have been found. Every other creature known to exist has left behind a dead body or skeleton. In fact, the Gobi would likely preserve carcasses of the animal due to the relative lack of predators and hot desert winds that slow decomposition. Inhabitants of the Gobi are aware of the global interest in their mystery monster, as well as offers of rich rewards for one of the creatures, live or dead, and if one was found, it would surely come to light. End quote. By the way, I am not calling Radford a bad writer. He writes about bad science. It's in his bio on the website. Personally, I haven't read enough of his work to have an opinion as to his talent. Writer Liz LeFleur over at Ancient Origins argues, though, that descriptions of the death worm are reminiscent of the death adder, a snake that is able to spit venom several feet. However, the death adder is known to live in Australia and New Guinea, and it would be quite a mystery to explain how it got all the way to the Gobi Desert as early as the 11th century. Though, to be fair, I could not track down this alleged 11th century account of the worm, and it seems to me that that may just be one of those facts that gets passed around without any verification. Then again, we're talking about a living intestine that both spits venom and shoots electricity and has never actually been seen. So the word fact should be taken with a grain of salt. A piece on How Stuff Works by Desiree Bowie reads, quote, "One theory proposes that the Mongolian death worm could be a surviving relic from prehistoric times, a living fossil that has adapted to the harsh desert environment over millennia," end quote. Perhaps, but again, especially considering the conditions of the desert, one would think some kind of remains of its prehistoric version would have been found by now. Indeed, several other important fossil remains of dinosaurs have been uncovered in the Gobi Desert. So where, pray tell, is the death worm or its ancestors? The death worm has, however, shown up in popular culture, as in the aforementioned Star Wars, Dune, and Beetlejuice. But also the Graboids in the Tremors series were based after the mythical creature. According to Cryptid Wiki, the video game Ark Survival Evolved features a death worm that is, quote, "taller than a T-Rex with leg-like appendages by the mouth and only able to bite and claw," end quote. If I might try to translate that appallingly written sentence, I believe it means to say that the worm can bite and claw its prey, but not spit venom or shock them electrically. There is also a Sci-Fi Channel movie called Mongolian Death Worm, but my favorite media appearance of the legendary creature might be a character in the game My Singing Monsters. According to Cryptid Wiki, there is a fan-made island called Cryptid Island on which a creature called Tryptosquirm, who is based directly on the death worm, appears. In case you're unfamiliar, My Singing Monsters is a game in which you hatch various monsters and place them on an island you can design, and together they create an orchestra. Here's what the Tryptosquirm sounds like. It's a great little game. But getting back to the real Mongolian death worm, I may just be a fuddy-duddy when it comes to this kind of thing. Again, it goes back to that pesky belief I have in science. But Mark Hay over at Atlas Obscura argues that, quote, "a good cryptid is more than a creature, so you can never catch or debunk it. The hunt is often less about finding a monster and more about the thrill of nature and exploring the unknown," end quote. And honestly, I'll admit that watching the Mongolian death worm episode of Beast Hunter made me a little jealous. I wouldn't mind getting paid to travel to faraway lands, get to know the locals, and enjoy their food, all while hunting a creature we all know I'll never catch. That sounds like a dream job. I am available if anyone out there wants to back me. The lore behind these legends is just as interesting to me. There is indeed a species of venomous snake that calls the Gobi its home. The Gobi pit viper can get up to about 2 feet in length. Its body is pale gray or brown, overlaid with a series of dark, irregularly shaped blotches bordered with black. The head is typically dark brown or black with beige or pale gray sides. It doesn't exactly sound like the Mongolian death worm, but if descriptions of the thing really do date back to the 11th century, it's not hard to imagine parents exaggerating tales of the thing to keep their children from wandering off. Children, especially older ones, are notoriously curious and adventurous. I imagine this was even more true back before the age of widely available popular media. Before they had comic books or TV shows and movies to scare them into thinking monsters lived in their closets, scary stories about monsters out in the world that could kill you in an instant were the only weapon parents had to keep kids from venturing too far from the cave or a yurt. The message being, we are less vulnerable when we stick together. There are all sorts of modern-day boogeyman stories that stem from simple seeds of truth like this one. But then the stories themselves get blown out of proportion as they're passed down. And over time, as those tales grow and grow further into the fabric of our culture, we can lose the lessons they contain. Our world contains mysteries from above and below. Sometimes they come in the form of a sickening, gooey rainfall that no one seems particularly bent on studying completely. Sometimes they emerge from the ground in the form of a monster no one has ever really seen, but whose legend materializes into something very real to many. As above, so below, goes the Hermetic philosophy, which is to say, we're a part of the story too. Our belief in things, or our lack of curiosity for them, cannot stay contained within us. These things are made manifest in the world. Whether we're endeavoring to ride the worm Dune style or poking inquisitively at the mysterious goo on our front lawns, our attempts at uncovering the truth are an integral part of the legends and theories we seek to prove. We may not always find what we're looking for, but we are certainly connected to the mysteries we pass on. Next time on Strange and Unexplained, Agatha Christie is one of the best-known murder mystery writers of all time. But while she was perfecting the genre, Christie became the subject of a real-life mystery. To this day, no one knows what happened to Agatha Christie when she blooped right off the earth. Strange and Unexplained is a production of Three Goose Entertainment with help from Grabbag Collab. Special thanks to Grabbag executive producer-level member Richard Nacy. This episode was written by me, Daisy Egan, with research by Keely Hies, editorial help from Becca D. Gregorio, and sound design and engineering by Jeff Devine. Music by Epidemic and Blue Dot Sessions. If you'd like to support the show, please consider becoming a member of Grabbag Collab. We have built an incredible community of listeners who support a small, profit-sharing, woman and non-binary-owned business. At Grabbag, we're committed to giving a platform to voices who might otherwise get overlooked by bigger networks. Plus, all our contributors get to keep ownership of their content. It's a whole new approach to podcasting. Come check it out at grabbagcollab.com. For just $4 a month or $40 a year, you can get Strange and Unexplained early and ad-free. And for just $8 or $80 a year, you'll get all the shows Grabbag has to offer, including my other shows, Dear Daisy and Shut the F Up, Nick Lachey, as well as Amber Hunt's Crimes of the Centuries, The Catalyst, Tales of the Resistance, What If They're Wrong, and all of our quarterly shows. You can even sign up to join our live recordings. We have book clubs, live hangs, watch parties, and more. If you're feeling extra generous, you can sign up at the $50 level for even more perks, including all our shows and extras, and have your name read in the credits of our shows. Head to grabbagcollab.com today to join. To suggest an episode for Strange and Unexplained, you can email me directly at contact@strangeandunexplainedpod.com or go to strangeandunexplainedpod.com and fill out the contact form. You can follow me on Instagram at SNUPod or Daisy Egan and join the Facebook page to be a part of the conversation. Thanks so much for listening and stay strange.
Yeah.
When it comes to plastic surgery, expertise matters, and CAP sets the standard. Our team includes 7 nationally ranked board-certified plastic surgeons, from tummy tucks, breast augmentation, and liposuction to facelifts and beyond. Every surgical plan is tailored to your body, goals, and recovery timeline. CAPS is trusted for consistent, visible outcomes. Plus, when you book your surgical consultation, you'll receive a $100 CAPS MedSpa gift card. Expert care, exceptional results. Visit experiencecaps.com. CAPS, where confidence begins.